Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a super guest. I am so thrilled that he's going to be on. His name is Colin Andrews, and he talks about a lot of the things that I'm very interested in. So let's bring him on. Hi, Colin. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Nancy. Nice to be with you.
Great. Now, Colin, you've done a lot of things, but before we start on what you do, let's talk a little bit about who Colin is and really what prompted you to start doing your research with crop circles.
I'm an electrical engineer by profession, although it is now true, of course, that I've not been practicing that for getting on for 30 years because of the crop circle research that I suddenly dovetailed off onto. So electrical engineer by profession, I was a senior government official for regional government in central southern England, very close to Stonehenge is where I was based. And I finished up, as you now know, researching the crop circles after I discovered a set of them on my way to a meeting in 1983. That's what started me off on this this track. But it wasn't too many years before we had sufficient data, and by we, I mean Pat Delgado, my first co-author, a friend and researcher, Dr. Terence Meaden, a meteorologist in central southern England, and a light aircraft pilot, Busty Taylor. All of us became friends and very deeply involved very quickly into this mystery, which was across the whole area where we lived. And so, you know, we gathered a lot of data. We were flying constantly looking for these designs and, you know, researching them in the sky and on the ground. And then I was asked, you know, by a military officer to supply reports to the then Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher's cabinet, and to the Queen and others down the road, Lawrence Rockefeller, et cetera. So that's really basically what kind of sets me up and why I'm talking to you today.
I really find it fascinating, Colin, because there are different theories, different, you know, thoughts that a lot of the crop circles were man-made. And then people came back and said, no, they couldn't possibly be because of the way this, you know, the grass has been bent without breaking and things like that. So maybe, Colin, explain the difference between a man-made crop circle and the real deal.
Right. Well, to be fair, Nancy, I was one of those people. And, you know, obviously being one of very few that was researching in the beginning, I was one of the people you were seeing on television and hearing on radio, like our program today, saying that surely to goodness what we're looking at in these highly evolved, intricate patterns covering vast areas could not possibly be made by people. Well, you know, we threw a lot at it over the years, scientifically and purely in an observational way, as a police detective would looking at a crime scene. And it became evident as the years went by, and more particularly after I was given funding to look at detail into people making them in the year 1999 and the year 2000, two-year period when Lawrence Rockefeller funded specifically that project to look at people making them. And after that, looking very closely at detective work, aerial surveillance work, undercover work as well, just about everything we could look at throw at it, it became very clear to us that during that two-year period, that's worth me saying because this isn't a worldwide conclusion I'm coming to here now. This is a very specific to the central southern England where most of them are formed. During that two-year period, we know that a rounded-off figure of 80%, which is quite a large figure, of everything that appeared in that two-year period that we looked at, which was most of them, were made by people. And many of them were unimaginatively complicated. But this is where it gets very interesting, because the 20%, and I would have actually, I think, saved myself a lot of aggro if I had put it this way at the time when I announced, you know, the findings. If I had said 20% we could not account for, real in every sense of the word as far as we can see, I think rings better to the ear than 80% are man-made, although it's the same thing, of course. And so we left. I finished up at the end of that project, where that 20% were most of them relatively simple, but it did include several that were also complex that we could find, and these are the salient features, no signs of damage at all, no pressure to the soil under the plants, no damage to the plants. There were changes at the cellular anatomic level. There were changes in the magnetic field in a number of those 20%, a number of the more simple designs, and one or two of the complex ones. And this separated them from the others, this 80%, where first of all we had evidence, on much of it on film, that many of the people making them weren't aware they were being filmed with low light and image intensifier cameras. So that we knew, and of course that gave us a solid base. But we also then looked closely at what they had produced. And there were pressure points where they had to stand at major fulcrum and construction points, as you would draw on a drawing board in your office, as architects do. They have to put their set squares and their pencils and pens and all the rest of it in very specific places to construct the geometry. So we went to those places on the ground in these huge designs, and found that people had been present, and the evidence was there for that. And there were no changes at the cellular level. They were broken in many cases. And so that's the contrary situation. And as I think you know, that I've traveled, the world looking at this. So I've looked at them in Australia. You know, I've been to Taiwan and Japan, down into Brazil and Canada, across the United States and Europe in general, and, have observed these marked differences. So I'm very confident in arriving at your conference in particular at the end of this month with not just a very solid piece of solid conclusion that we have something here not only real but actually extremely important with regard to the human consciousness, which is where this has all taken us. So I'm sorry that was a very, very long response, but those are the primary differences, and they're now said with really quite some conviction.
I mean, you know, a lot of the crop circles are absolutely magnificent, and they do have very, very intricate things, and it's like, how could anybody really do that? So if they're being made by man, you know, kind of maybe calling, how many people would it take in one night, because they're usually done in one night, to create something that's so intricate?
Yeah, the teams that we know a lot about, more than they know that we know a lot about, because of the work that was done then, and some follow-ups that have been done since, we're looking at teams at the small end, a very smallish design, of 3-4 people, but it's usually 6 or 7 individuals to construct a much more intricate pattern. Some of the designs are so large and so complex, they're actually constructed over more than one night. You are right to say that most of them do indeed appear during one night, but the very large, very intricate designs that require more time than a single, you know, darkened hours of one night, they are revisited and added to make that particular pattern. But here, Nancy, you nail a very important point also, and that is that you might remember that back, I think it's now probably 15 years ago, I was asked by a special interest group at the United Nations to look and present data down there in New York related to those that we had reported as eyewitness events. In other words, people who had seen crop circles form. And this is very important because there was then, and there's a few more since, but at the time I did that presentation and investigated and researched it, there were about 70 people who had claimed to see crop circles form. And I interviewed as many of those as was possible for that presentation and, of course, for our research. And all of them, absolutely all of them, describe an event that takes place in different shapes and forms. As the individuals gave their descriptions, there were different features that they would relate, but they all agreed that what they saw form in front of them took no more than 15 seconds. That it was, you're looking at, some would say 10, others 15, so it was really a very agreeable common denominator that this is a very fast phenomenon that occurs.
Yeah, I mean, because I've seen different videos of, you know, a circle being formed while it's being videoed. And, I mean, I don't know how real it is or if it's like a time lapse or whatever. But you watch them and it's like, holy cow. You know, and it's like done, like you said, in 10, 15 seconds or whatever, 10, 15 minutes. And it's like perfect. And I go, man, that's, and not only that, but they're very pretty too. You know, so the ones that are real, Colin, do they give a message? I mean, is there a message that's coming from them, or are they just doing it because it's a pretty design?
That's a good question. There are really a couple of answers because it's both things. We've now had in the region of 12,000 individual designs that have appeared around the world since the time we've been gathering the data, which is 1983. And in many of those, they are produced with an agenda, that is, that they're produced by people who want others to think something or another based upon what that is supposed to depict, the design is supposed to depict. There are others that we have, again, researched as thoroughly as possible that do communicate information and that we cannot attribute their construction to people. And this really and truly is the very nub, and what I'm very excited to present at the Wake Up Now conference is going to be, I've just come back from Malta with some more information, and what we have here is a very complex, very spectacularly beautiful, but very important for us. We have here an interaction going on between people that are making some of the designs, and we could talk about that separately, also with people researching them, and the individual, the member of the public, who happens to get themselves involved in a kind of an attached way with this mystery. It is a quite extraordinary situation, which actually has, I was talking to a person, a hoaxer last night, something I would have never done a few years ago because they've caused us such problems. But this has been mind-blowing to some of the people who set off to deceive us, to trick us all, which is not a particularly pleasant thing for any human to do to another, especially when there's money and resource involved. People have given up their work, as I did, for this. We have Native Americans and Native peoples around the world who have adjusted or taken aboard for their prophecies data discovered in crop circles. You know, we have people, politicians and royalty that I've advised who take one particular stance or another, some publicly, only, you know, to discover that part of this is a deception by our fellow man. Well, you know, pretty disgraceful, and thankfully much of this is now kind of going to be put behind us because everybody is involved in this. Everybody is involved, and there are going to be some names and some particulars that I will mention and show the evidence of, you know, at your conference. I'm very excited about it because it's as solid as you're going to get. It's checkable, you know, with names, dates, and places, and experiences these people have had. I don't think you can ever better, I'm sure you would agree, that the personal experience is what most of us hang our reality on. You know, it's what we have experienced, it's what we believe. It's not that we disbelieve other people, but when we've had the experience, that's more than, it's not a second hand, it's not anything that the belief system is challenged by. You've had it and you know it, and forever you're looking to understand what's happened. And I have been fortunate enough, honored is probably the word, to have been so immersed in this for now for so long that I've had experiences that have kept me on this track. I've never set out to convince anybody of anything. As you know, and you know, you are a primary organizer of this event, I did not ask, for example, to come to your event. I'm just making it on a personal level, you know, because you know this. I am invited to share my data, and I'm very happy to do it. So I'm not setting out, and I've never set out, to change anybody's belief systems. I am just sharing data, but I am totally convinced, as an engineer coming from the sciences myself, this is very important, what's going on here.
Yeah, there's just so many things, Colin, that is trying to help us wake up. And the normal human population, who does not like changes and who can be very lazy with doing any kind of response, are going to have to wake up at some point in time. I know everybody is very worried about 2012. Now, I know that this Earth is not going to implode itself at 2012. However, I also know that the normal everyday person needs to do some of their own work to, you know, get their consciousness where it needs to be. And yet, yeah, you can talk about it all day long, and people look at you like you're the one who's from another planet, and you're the one who's got to be crazy. So all the evidence that really actually be presented at the conference should be some, you know, some info that people really just don't want to miss. And yes, I invited you because I was very thrilled for two reasons. One is because of crop circles, but the other reason is because you talk about the children's consciousness awakening and how important that is.
Yes, and absolutely. It's something I feel very strongly about.
And I don't know if parents, adults, understand that these children are so much more highly advanced than, you know, most of the people walking on Earth. And yet they will drug them. They will tell them you can't talk about what you know and stuff like that. So those are the two main reasons why I wanted you to come to the conference, because the wake-up call, basically, is now, and we can't keep putting it off. You know, we can't.
No.
I mean, we could, but it's not going to do us any good. You know, so you've written a few books. So, Colin, what is your latest book that you've got out now?
The latest book is the Complete Idiot's Guide series on the Akashic Record, which is, you could substitute that term, which is not too familiar with some people. You could substitute that with the term consciousness. It's one of the books that we've most, that's written by Cynthia and I, my wife and I, co-authored it together. That's just been out a short while now, and we thoroughly enjoyed it because it's so close to what we believe and what we're trying to do ourselves in helping to educate, as you rightly said, the children in particular. We really, truly must give our children hope in a difficult period, which we are undoubtedly going through. But the one that was published just before that was also, again, for the Complete Idiot's Guide series, that we were asked to write the book on 2012, and we both learned an awful lot. We both have many contacts in the indigenous world, you know, mine through my research and Cynthia through family and her own research. And we tapped into all the native peoples. I went through a scientific fraternity, including NASA, some NASA contacts, to try and substantiate just how accurate the data was. It was coming forward from the Hopi, from the Mayan prophecy for 2012. And all that we could see, and we've tried to be very fair. We certainly ensured that we were not scaremongering, like the movie unfortunately put out. You again, I think, are right on. You know, you're right on with your own view that we're not looking at any end period here. We're certainly looking at the end of a cycle, but we're not looking at the end of the world. I mean, what's happening outside the window now is tempering itself now into 2012. You're looking at a trend line, which is already trends that are already underway. It's not like 21st of December 2012, suddenly the switch will be thrown and we're going to be in chaos. Well, we're slowly entering chaos, and on many levels, the you know, there are parallel multiplexed trend lines, which I call good or bad. These are trends that you can attribute numbers to. I mean, everyone on the graph that I have on the website and will present in Albuquerque, these are trends that happened, all of them, every single one of them, from the solar cycle 24 through the population explosion, global health. There are many of them that, you know, run through politics and religion, and they all finish up in the same place, decoupled and disconnected around 2012. But what that produces, and it's not only science tells us this, but the prophecy itself does talk about a Ketun, the first Ketun, the Mayans would describe it, and we did it in the book, of the first. The beginning of the next cycle runs towards 2033, where it is said, and the crop designs have told us this too, there is a common message here, that we must be, by the end of the first Ketun in the new cycle, up to 2033, in a coherence, and that's a very important term, a coherence of love. However, men in particular cannot deal with this name, this word, this glue that forms a new reality, a new existence, a new time, is love. And that's where we've got to be, like it or not, by that time. So we're being given now an opportunity. The most powerful thing you can do for a human being is to offer an opportunity. And this is our opportunity to change our world. And so, I'm obviously coming with the data, with the facts from the last two books, to really consolidate a very common message, which I think is going to be, to many people, Nancy, mind-blowing, because I know at your conference I am going to be asking the audience to put away pretty well any preconceived ideas and allow themselves to consider, just simply that, consider what I'm going to show them, because there is here a clear message. And that is what I want to deliver in Albuquerque.
See, and I really appreciate your coming. And your wife, Cynthia, is also going to be speaking. So, you know, for people who follow you, you know, we need to let them know that both of you will be there actually talking. The thing that, from the time I was 6 years old, Colin, I had like a really freak accident where I landed with my head and neck under my back. So by all rights, I should be dead or paralyzed, and obviously I'm not. However, my consciousness awakening opened up, and so I, you know, was being told and shown many, many things from age 6 years old. And one of them that they kept telling me at age six, which, you know, I didn't really understand, was the number 2010. And, you know, as we get closer, you know, I've been told over and over again, 2010 to 2050, a 40-year span. And I didn't understand it at first. And then everybody started talking about 2012, and then I would hear, no, not 2012. It's already started. So to try to get people to understand that, you know, that date, because it's going to be so publicized, and it already has, and it's going to be shown in a very bad light, and it's going to be a lot of people trying to make a lot of money off of people who are going to run in fear and worry because of what the media tells them and what the television tells them and what people are saying. And they've got to really not do that because it's already started. And the important part, you know, again, is for our consciousness to catch up with the time frame, you know, not say, oh, well, we 2 more years to go, which, or a year, you know, it doesn't work like that. No. You know, so one of my things that I did, and the reason why, and I want everybody to know this who has listened, the reason why I'm doing the Wake Up Now conference is for a couple reasons. One, I really think people need to wake up. But two, it's mostly for the children to help raise money to build the school of now that I'm trying to build so that these children actually get told the truth. Because we have been lied to almost forever. But the children know the truth, except, again, they're being squished. So a lot of the changes, I think, Colin, that are going to be coming in is that the truth is going to be known, you know, and is it going to hurt some people? Probably. But is it going to wake up everybody? Definitely. And these children are the ones who really will probably end up putting this world back together in love, like you say, because I always talk about that, and in truth. And if we have love and truth, in my opinion, then we could survive just about anything.
You've got it. You've got it. I mean, I am so supportive of everything you've just said. You know, truth does take us to a better place. And this is the very big lesson. I hope as many that need to get that message get it. I'm sure many, that, if not most, that will be at the conference know that. And that's probably why they're there. We are all, I think we're having to be appealing here to those multinational kind of corporate bosses, if I may say that, and certain political individuals too with other agendas that are not there for us. You know, they've lost their way and they've lost us our way. And I, you know, as I kind of constantly say, that no government, no unelected or elected body has the right to stifle truth and to encourage manipulation and lies, which we see every day on every one of our television sets. You know, whether you're watching advertisements of exaggeration to lies and distortions from Hollywood, to spin at political parties and speeches, it's a world of spin and distortion. And that is not what our children need for the future. So I'm with you 100%. And we should not be sorry to be tackling this in a vigorous manner. Our world has got to change, and we have limited time to put it right. So this is the way it's going to be, and this is the way it's got to be, and the rest will come running with us. That is it. I think the public in general, I think particularly here in the United States, are suddenly beginning to see this, that it's all the same agenda, and it's not getting us anywhere. You know, so I agree with you. I present to children in, in a number of schools and different places when I'm asked, and they're as bright as they are bright buttons. These kids know. They just need the support, help, and hope that we can and should be providing them. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Now, you also, first of all, to go to Colin's website, it's colinandrews.net. He's got a lot of very interesting things on there, and pictures and videos and everything. So, colinandrews.net. Now, Colin, if somebody wants to purchase your books, any of them, because you have a lot out there, where can they purchase them at?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. They can also purchase them off of the website. We don't actually have a store, but steer them to where they can obtain them. Most good, most bookstores carry the books that we've written. Cynthia has written some that, herself as well. So there's a range of them, really. Amazon.com, of course, Barnes & Noble, all the major outlets carry them. So they're relatively easily obtainable. The one that is not, that is self-published, actually I say self, it actually wasn't published by me personally, but somebody that I know, I will be bringing some of those. It's called Government Circles, and it's a whole different situation that's in that book. It had to be written because actually it's something that I feel you would also feel strongly about. We've kind of touched upon it here. The British government, after I had advised on the reports to the Margaret Thatcher government and had correspondence with a number of the royal family, the Queen included, about the crop circle phenomenon, the British government chose through the Ministry of Defense to rewrite or attempt to rewrite history. They, have some time now between us to go into great detail, but the book that I wrote, I had to write because I gave them, this sounds terribly arrogant on my part, but I offered them an opportunity to correct vastly serious errors in their so-called official statement of the position of the British government related to the crop circle and indeed the UFO. And because I was the guy that was providing the reports, I knew this to be totally untrue and inaccurate. And so I said to Nick Pope, who is well known, who was the former head of the UFO desk at the Ministry of Defense in London, I spoke to him personally and said, Nick, this is a complete distortion and fabrication of the reality. And we're entering a very important time now, and this needs to be put right. And if it is not put right, then I'm going to publish documents that I have in my possession that will put it right. And I'm saying this just for, I'm hoping to say it very quickly. There's a lot behind the scenes on this, but they did not correct it. And therefore, I streamed onto the internet and made a number of major presentations in Washington, D.C. and in other countries, presented the details. I presented the actual letters from the Queen, the Duke of Edinburgh, and also many well-known people, with the Deputy Prime Minister and other senior members of the British government. And I also published secret photographs taken from their surveillance aircraft, the police and the Ministry of Defense's secret aircraft and surveillance program, of which I was part. I had documentation and photographs. And so, in short, that book is not available in general. I was actually threatened to remove certain documents immediately, or there would be consequences. It's actually a single document I'm not permitted to show even at your conference at the end of the this month. But almost everything except one document is in that book, Government Circles. That will be available at your conference. And on my website, there is an outlet that allows that book to be purchased.
Like I keep telling everybody, this is one conference they don't want to miss. They'll be missing out a whole lot.
Well, this is one I'm really looking forward to, Nancy, because, you know, 30 years is a long time. I gave up my whole-time career in my country, and indeed my whole family are living in England, and I'm living here 5,000 miles away with my lovely wife. But, you know, I don't ask for a pat on the back. I simply know that I have given a lot for this time and for this particular message. And your conference will be the conclusions of a 30-year piece of work. So, you know, I'm going to give it my best shot. You've given me, I think, nearly 2 hours as the keynote there, and I'm going to give it my best shot.
Well, I think you're going to do a wonderful job. Now, let's talk a little bit about the ninth sign and the last sign. So it's like the ninth sign, but it's the ninth sign is the last sign. Is that what it is?
You've gotten me on this one. Could you say a little bit more? I'm not quite getting where you're going with that, Nancy.
When you talk with the ancestors and about the blue star, one of the things that is, you know, that they come out with is that there have been nine signs that is showing the differences in, you know, everything that's going to be happening, and it's been in these nine signs.
Yes, I see. I'm sorry. Yes, I understand where you are. Well, one of them, I think we were back several signs ago, before I went down to the United Nations with the Hopi elder that had the prophecy, and you know, his last talk to the United Nations, which was referred to as the House of Micah and the Hopi prophecy. He and I went down there and presented some years ago now. But so one of the signs on the ground was considered to be a certain range of crop circles. And then came the blue kachina, and which was considered by a number of native peoples, including the current Hopi elders, to have been the spiral that was discovered and seen by many, and is on the website and other people's websites, that appeared over Norway, which coincided with the Environmental Global Warming Conference in Oslo. So that was considered to be, you know, heading towards the final signs. And I think, and I don't want to speak out of place, I prefer actually the native peoples to say this for themselves, because, you know, it isn't my domain, although I've worked with many of them. I would say that these are not their words, but my best attempt at what I believe they would say is that the the BP Gulf oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico was, I think, pretty well considered to be our last kind of throes to get our act together. And as you said, time to wake up.
Very big time for waking up. Do you know anything, Colin, about HAARP? You know, that piece of equipment that our wonderful government has that a lot of people don't know about. Can you talk about that a little bit to help people understand the magnitude of that?
Yes. I'm not an expert. I'm obviously an electrical engineer. I have an appreciation and understanding of some of it. But it is, because it is funded primarily by the military, the United States military, Navy in particular, the Alaskan Array, which is a huge array of aerials that beaming high levels of high frequency waves into the ionosphere and creating, causing the outer atmosphere to distort into a beveled geometry, hence bouncing, modifying the local field, Earth's magnetic field, modifying it, heating it, distorting it. And the official reason they are doing this is to improve global communications. This is something that is not believed by many, including myself, because there's so much to say about this, as you can hear. It kind of comes out of my ears. This kind of fires me up, because here we have current-day science and politicians. We've got both camps here, political, military, and science, working together, acting as God. They are playing, experimenting with our planet. This, for me, is an extremely serious situation, much like genetic engineering and so on, where one is playing with God and has no idea about the consequences. There are suspicions, and I'm involved in some of this research, that the localized effects of HAARP are indeed causing changes in significant changes in the meteorology. I have been involved for 1 year only, but one very interesting year of gathering data, looking in very close detail with the help of many, many people via my website in Australia. And this really started in I believe it was February, a year ago, just over a year ago, when I started to receive a number of emails that a large ring had been seen on the BOM, which is the Australian government's Bureau of Meteorology, on their radar, weather radar. And I started to look at this. Now, I was already, because I've studied meteorology over the years, I was very familiar with some of the radar returns that have got rational explanations for them, you know, with birds, flocks of birds, and you could carbon in the atmosphere from large-scale fires, forest fires, and so on. This was different, and I started to make inquiries through the Australian government and other meteorologists, Thomas Bearden and others I called upon, Bruce McApee and so on, other physicists. And the BOM themselves, that is the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia, themselves acknowledged that they didn't have a full explanation for that return. Well, what I did very briefly here is that I separated via the internet. This is access that anybody listening can do themselves. They can go into the Bureau's own weather site off of the internet, and you can turn on or off separately the satellite feed and the radar return. So those two things are overlaid to give you the local weather situation. So I did that and found that if I turn the radar off, at the center of what had been a radar ring was a cloud spiral that the satellite was picking up. So this was real and physical. This was not a radar anomaly, which I find highly suspicious. There had been a localized modification that created a weather effect, which I suspect may well have been HAARP. But what happened then, Nancy, and I'll try and kind of tighten this up a little bit, is that a 1,000-year drought in parts of Australia broke. Within weeks, there were, as we now remember, these terrible floods in Australia. A 1,000-year drought broke. There were 100-year storms, record storms, in many of the major cities. And now we have radar patterns that appear, are followed by earthquakes, that are followed by more modification to the long established, I mean, we're talking about thousands of years of established cyclical events as far as the weather is concerned, now changed. And so I strongly suspect that I could say much more, and we would need time to do that, but I suspect that HARP is much more than a communication experiment. I think that some guys have got their hands on a weapon here, and NATO and the EEC have themselves called for the United States to supply individuals to an investigation into what they suspect also is being used in a very negative way.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, because when Katrina, for example, hit the United States, and it was in our country, not across the ocean, it took our government at least a week to take military personnel down there. Now, when the Haiti earthquake happened, they had under martial guards military protection within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it didn't make a lot of sense. And then I read something about Haiti having a very large deposit of oil under their country, as well as gold.
And there's that magical word.
That's the case, then guess what? You know, it's pretty much predetermined that that was planned. But what I don't think that they realize when they do things like this, that they are shifting the planet so terribly that they're going to be setting us up for a lot more disasters yet to come, because they are messing with Mother Nature.
I couldn't agree more. I wish I were able to be much more conclusive with the current work that goes on. There, you know, with most private research of the kind that I'm involved with, it's self-funded, almost all of it. The resources are very limited, and you have these things, these situations like HARP, which can potentially be of tremendous gravity. I mean, if the answer to one question, which is, did a weapon known in its outcome cause something of the kind, the magnitude that's happened in Japan recently? Now, you know, I can already hear in the background, you could hear scientists saying, what an absolute lot of nonsense this guy's talking. Well, it is possible that we've got this wrong, and that it purely is nature stepping itself up, mind you, because it isn't just earthquakes. We're looking at the planet, and nature itself is really ramping up here. But, you know, if those plates were moved deliberately to create an ongoing catastrophe of the kind that's unwinding here, we've not seen the end of this nuclear problem. It is very clear. There are far cleverer people than I that are looking at this. I'm actually just about to post something on the website tonight that is staggeringly worrying with the isotopes that are involved. And so if that was deliberate, enough, you know, I mean, I don't know where we and how we get to the bottom of it. You know, I don't know how we do that, but we've got to plug away, keep an eye on them, do not let these people out of our sights. This is our time.
It is our time, but, you know, like I said earlier, Colin, the only thing that I see is that there are many people who want to keep their head buried in the sand, and I've said this a couple times. My quote for those people is, if you keep your head buried in the sand long enough, you're going to get your butt kicked really hard. See, that's the only thing that's up, you know? And
it's
like, take it out of the sand, you know? It's time for people to truly wake up, know what's going on. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to kind of stand your ground, you know? But yet, for whatever reason, we're like lambs being led to a slaughterhouse, and I'm a rebel, so, you know, I don't understand how people can't look at it and go, you know, we have no constitutional rights at this point. Everything that we think we have, we don't have. You know, I mean, it's amazing. And so I really think that, you know, conferences like what the Wake Up Now conference is, other conferences that are going on, people really need to listen to them and open up their minds so they really do know what's going on, not just, you know, what they're kind of being halfway told or not told. Now, my other question for you, Colin, which is always one of my favorite topics too, is the visitations of the UFOs. Why is it that most governments still, well, not as much now, but before, wanted to keep this a big, deep, dark secret that there are no such things as UFOs, they don't exist, there's no aliens, there's no ETs, it's all made up? Why do they do that?
Yeah, another great question, and I really, truly, I mean, I've got thoughts, but I don't know the answer to it. I think my own view is that they do believe that, for the reasons that you've been saying, people need to wake up. Basically, is that there's a large, unfortunately, a large segment of our society that would, they believe, the governments, I think, feel that would be far too challenged with something of this kind. Religion does, you know, every religion, of course, is a little different. They're all praying to one form of God or another. But some are going to be right and some are going to be wrong, I guess. But the bottom line is that as long as there is belief and faith, it's not altogether a bad thing, because it does give some level of stability, a reality to individuals that they can kind of live with and participate in other events around, you know, around their lives. But you know, when you introduce something of the kind that was witnessed, for example, by a police sergeant in England, as I'm very involved with that investigation, you know, claiming a police sergeant who's just left his police station to see three light beings, three very tall beings, in a field where there was already a crop marking. It changed this guy's life. I mean, it changed his family's life. There have been ongoing situations that have almost, you might say, went home with him from the field. But, the general member of public being told that what that policeman saw is real and is going to be ongoing, and there's going to be an integration and a change in everybody's lives, and that what religion they've been practicing or believing may need to be looked at in light of new data, new information. And when we say new, to some governments, and the U.S. is one of these, not particularly new. You know, what happened in Roswell, sorry to keep saying me, but I guess it's me that you're talking to, but I have been very involved with that research too, and you know, I know many of the players down there in Roswell, and undoubtedly something happened of great gravity. And so I think it's the challenge, and I think, Nancy, worth saying that it could well be that they have their hands, the U.S. in particular, on some technology that they want to make as much ground with before this whole thing blows. You know, I spent time with Phil Corso, who was President Eisenhower's science advisor and a military attaché, I think, at one point in the 60s in the White House. So I was lucky enough to spend a week with him, and the things that he was telling me were just totally, totally mind-blowing. They are aware, they absolutely know that the UFO is very important, that the technology is something that I think they're to some degree working with and would like to be doing more. And when Britain, as they have recently gone public now on phase three, I think, of the release of their documents, and many other countries have followed, Brazil, Belgium, New Zealand, and others have followed, the U.S. is holding tight. And I think they're going to wait. My view is that they're going to wait, and as long as possible, to make as much mileage of what they have as an advantage by the engineering or back engineering of certain devices that they discovered in Roswell, New Mexico, and in a number of other places.
Yeah, it's really... See, New Mexico is very notorious for having a lot of UFO stuff. And
yeah.
One of the other speakers, his name is Norio, and he's from, you know, Albuquerque area. And he's done some studies on Area 51, Dulce, which is supposed to have an underground base there, and how it's connected with Los Alamos and the Sandia Labs, and then Kirkland Air Force Base and White Sands Military Base. You know, and they form this kind of like a L-shaped thing. And I'm on the last leg of that L-shaped thing where I live, because where I live, Colin, there's nobody out here but just our little group here, and then there's nothing but the mountains. But there's a lot of strange things that appear over here. But Kirkland Air Force Base is on the other side of the mountains and just north of where I live. So a lot of different things appear here that are kind of unexplained. And
really?
You don't ever see them again. Oh, yeah. You know, and I love it, okay? I mean, I love it because I have all this space and I can watch, you know, things go across the sky during the daytime, and I can see things at night in the sky. So it's kind of great. But I think the more they try to keep this from people and the more that they try to act like this doesn't exist, the more the people are going to know at some point in time that they have covered up for so long that they either have to keep covering it up or very soon they're going to have to expose it. And I think they're kind of debating which is going to be more conducive to the government.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they're getting under more and more pressure. I think people like Steve Bassett and Steve Greer have done. I know they've got their detractors, as I have, but they've done a pretty good job on this behind the scenes and publicly on the disclosure project. There are many people like, you know, Edgar Mitchell and so on, who I've also gotten to know very well and like a lot. People that have seen things, very reputable guys, you know, from astronauts and pilots, very reputable people who are trained observers. We pay them a lot of money to train them as quality observers and then disbelieve them when what they've seen suddenly fits something we don't want to hear about, which is that term UFO. You know, we'll believe everything else. We put them in silos with nuclear buttons on their ends of their fingers. But the moment they say that a UFO hovered over that base, then they finish up in the funny farm. It's crazy. You know, it's really, truly crazy. It's a Stone Age period that I'll be glad to get rid of, to be honest with you.
Me too, Colin. We only have a couple minutes left. So on your website, there's a very interesting quote that you have, and I would like to read it in the last few minutes and give some the people who are listening something to kind of think about. It's a quote. It says, "Our transition. It's important to maintain our sense of humor, to allow ourselves to dream, and to enjoy each day that we are given. Sometimes freedom feels as if it will be temporary for most and never coming up for others. But the gift of this moment is surely lost for those in government who are blinded by the need to control and own our destiny. We refuse to be the enemies of someone else's battle. In our heart, we are always winning and always free. Out of this chaos is coming a new time." That's a great, great thing that you put on there.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You know, and again, it's real important, I think, Colin, that people really start to open their eyes, because right now they really do have a lot of blindfolds on, or like I said, they have their head buried in the sand. Our time is actually just about up. So in this last time, please tell the people again where they can find your books and also give out your website one more time.
Sure, thank you. Well, all of the books, some of which you and I have mentioned, all of them are available at colinandrews.net. You'll see a button there for the store, and that will steer you to wherever you can purchase them. So that is colinandrews.net, and constantly updated. All the research data in the archives are all being made available to the public, and that's the window where it will be arriving.
Great. And remember, everybody who's listening, Colin is going to be at the Wake Up Now conference here in the Albuquerque area, April 29th through May 1st. And I'm hoping you're going to bring some of your books so you can sign them, because people are going to want some signatures for you, I'm sure. So if you can bring some with you, bring them with you. But I'd like to really thank you for taking the time talking with us. Like I said, I find it very fascinating, and I'm so glad, very glad, that you're going to be at the conference. I look forward to meeting you.
It's my pleasure, Nancy. I look forward to meeting you and the audience, too.
Should be a lot of fun. You know, and then you're going to kind of hang out around New Mexico for a little while. You're not just going to leave right away, right?
No, absolutely. We love that part of the country. Absolutely. So Cynthia and I are really looking forward to it.
What's really cool is on Monday, once I get some of the others that are going to be leaving to the airport, I'm going to take whoever wants to go over here by Los Lunas to see what's called the Mystery Rock. And what it is, Colin, it's a 10-ton rock that was found that has ancient Hebrew writing and some other kind of writing that they really have no idea what it is.
Oh, so, I would love to see that.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, you'll go with us, because it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's you look at it and you're going to go, holy cow, what's that doing here?
Oh, I would like to. What are the, are we on air now or we're off?
No, we're on.
We're on air, sorry. I thought we were just having a casual chat there. Well, I will very much look forward to that. I mean, this script, all of the ancient scripts I've gotten myself, well, actually, I didn't involve myself, but I have gotten involved in these lead codices that have just been made public. You know, they were discovered in Jordan 5 years ago. It's extraordinarily interesting. And so anything that's got script and symbols, I'm in. There's a lot to be learned. I look forward to seeing that.
Okay, great. Then I would just count you in. And, Colin, it's been a pleasure having you on air. And I will see you in about 2 weeks.
Look forward to it, Nancy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time. You have a great day now, okay?
And you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I do. May God bless all of you, and don't forget about the Wake Up Now conference. Tickets are still available, and you really don't want to miss this one. WakeUpNowConference.com. Get you all the information you need. Take care. Have a great week. Bye now.